session number 28660, Captain Robert Bonner, Rail 5. Now, what was the pattern of training that you established? You started with platoon training, but how did the pattern of training develop during the year?
We were very fortunate in in that we were based in a magnificent ex-Wehrmacht barracks in Wuppertal, which at that time was surrounded by open country, farmland and woodland. Now, I hasten to say, all these years later, it is, to the best of my knowledge, completely built up. But in those days, it allowed us to be able to have platoon and section training for ordinary infantry roles, really working straight out of the barracks. And this then extended to 2 and 3 day excursions out into further areas of the country around Wuppertal, which was absolutely perfect for basic infantry training. It also allowed platoon commanders and their non-commissioned officers a wonderful opportunity of getting to know their soldiers well, working in close proximity, and particularly, I suppose, in those when the day's work was over and exercises were finished, and it was not a question of going back to a comfortable bed in barracks, but bivouacking in the area of a friendly farm, and also getting the benefits of the farmers' surreptitious black market deals with us, with changing a few tins of beef and other goodies, biscuits and things for fresh farm eggs, which of course the soldiers loved.
Now tell me a bit, we'll come back to Joe, but what was the process of getting to know you? I mean, because the relationship between a platoon commander and his platoon sergeant and with the men, the other NCOs and the men, is very important in the British Army. How did you see the relationship and how did you try and build one up with your platoon?
We spent a great deal of time together. It was fortunate in those days that although we young men of 20 years of age had been well trained and skilled at Sandhurst and officer cadet training units, we were fortunate in that our senior non-commissioned officers and the warrant officers were all men with a great deal of experience with the regiment or with other Lancashire regiments in the Second World War, either in Europe or in the Far East. So on the whole, it's safe to say they were a pretty wise and hardened bunch of people in the sergeant's mess. And as always happened then and happens to the present day, they took their young officers under their wing and made sure that we didn't make too many nonsenses to the embarrassment of ourselves or our soldiers. As a result of this, I won't call it a shield, but this relationship, it was relatively easy to get to know our Lancashire soldiers, our Mancunians, extremely well. And friendships made in those days in Wuppertal in 1948-49 still continue to this day. So I think it speaks for itself.
Would you make it your business to get to know not only your men's names, but a bit about their background?
The majority of the soldiers were regular soldiers or those completing the end of their basic national service. And the first and most important thing was to get to know them, their names, and as much as one could about their background in case they needed any specific assistance or help. But they were a tougher breed in those days than the present-day youth, and far more independent, and there was never really the great necessity to have to mother in any form. They were all strong, determined young men.
Would the normal, you formed quite close friendships with them, but would the normal Curtis is a rank bit. I mean, would you call them sergeant or private? Would they call you sir? I mean, or would you call each other by your first name? I can't imagine that.
There was no question of any first names between anybody. A very fine system which works extremely well. No, everybody knew their position, everybody knew how to dress. My soldiers and my would call me sir, and I would call my superior officer sir. And that would be always on parade, and it would only relax within the confines of the officer's mess. And there's no question of soldiers would never try to take any liberty with their superiors.
That would never relax. What would you call them? Private or Private Barnes, or what? You know, their name or what?
Perfectly normal to refer to them as by their surname.
Just by their surname.
Yes, unless of course they were up in front of their company commander on a disciplinary matter, when they would be given the entitlement of their rank, whether it's private or lance corporal or whatever.
That's the platoon train. How did the training develop during the year? Because it gradually gets larger until it ends up in the big exercise. I mean, how did what was the sort of progress of training?
Sennelager near Paderborn was the great army training camp in those days, as it still is. Battalion training in its simplest forms, from section, platoon and company, went on until in sort of the late summer, early autumn, the whole of the division of British troops in the area would consolidate at Sennelager, and there that they would operate really for the first time, learning and carrying out battalion training. And very quickly, the battalion into brigade training, and ultimately divisional training. So it was a very well thought out structure. Although you might be working with another battalion of a regiment which you had no contact with normally, it all came back really to the success of how the individual platoons had been trained in the first place.
Now, what was the nature of the divisional exercises? What were they like at Sennelager? What would you actually be doing?
Well, basically, they were based on two armies, a red army and perhaps a green army, and the exercise would last perhaps 7 to 8 days out in the open, sleeping in dugouts or under bivouac, and it would be as near an operational situation based at that time on World War II track tactics against this mythical red or green army, whichever it was that they had been decided upon. And this meant cooperation between all the infantry battalions in the division and the armoured battalions of the Royal Armoured Corps and the cavalry regiments. So there were many opportunities for liaison between different regiments, different organisations, not forgetting, of course, the corps providing the Royal Engineers, the Army, the Ordnance Corps, and others of that ilk. Before we went off to sort of divisional camps like that at Sennelager, in addition to the ordinary infantry battalion training carried out by the infantry regiments, the specialist components of the support company had to undergo their own training. So if you consider that in those days there were four infantry companies, A, B, C and D, a headquarter company which looked after the administration and the clerical work, and support company. And support company comprised a medium machine gun platoon with the Vickers machine gun, a 3-inch mortar platoon, and an anti-tank platoon. On occasions, there would be an assault pioneer platoon, but that was a fairly flexible organization. And these platoons all enjoyed a rather higher degree of efficiency, perhaps, than elsewhere. And the men chosen to be in those platoons were chosen because of their perhaps rather better skills and initiative. I had the great pleasure of commanding the 3-inch mortar platoon. And
now that's a little, I thought when you went there you were with 9 platoon.
Yes, right, I was. Yeah, right.
When did you switch to...
Yes. Well, yes, after about... okay. Scrub that last bit then.
No, we'll come back to it later.
Well, no, I'll bring it in. As far as training is concerned, at that time in Germany, or British Army on the Rhine, there were two basic requirements. One was an internal security role, and the other was training. The internal security role, I think, speaks for itself. There were times, not very frequent by then, when we had to go out in aid of the certain parts of
Don't worry about what were you doing?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think who did he. There was, I'm trying to think of the name of the program there, but as far as internal security was concerned, we were there to help the local authorities or the local military government officials in their day-to-day work. There weren't very many requirements, but there was one particular instance when we were called upon to go out to... Although there was, under the terms of the Allied government, there was much production of, or the creation of a new and rebuilt Germany, from time to time, tensions did run high. And there were still quite a lot of factories and works being dismantled by the French and the Germans, French and the Russians, as part of their program to achieve some form of reparation from the German people. And there was one incident at Oberhausen in the Ruhr when there was an oil from coal plant which the French were endeavoring to strip down. There was an enormous plant covering many hundreds of acres, and the company had been told by the War Commission to assist in its dismantling, but the dismantling crew were chased away by the employees of the company, and a sort of gentle state of anarchy resulted. Because of this situation and the dismantling crew not being allowed back onto the premises, it was considered a time to show the flag. So first Manchesters got into their armoured vehicles and their brand gun carriers and roared down the Ruhr to Oberhausen, where they took over this enormous works complex. and spent 24 hours there until such time as the negotiations between the Allied Commission and the owners of the plant were sorted out, and work on dismantling was resumed, and we were allowed to go back to our soldiering in Wuppertal.
Was there any actual trouble, or did they just give up when you arrived?
There was no trouble as such. In fact, everyone concerned on both sides was extraordinarily friendly. But we were not there, the soldiers were not there to do anything other than act as an influence for the negotiators of the Allied Commission to get on with. And I think in that we succeeded.
Any other illustrations of this kind of deployment?
There were other smaller ones, but that was the most important one.
Did you have any actual internal security training at this point?
Yes, internal security training was carried out on a company basis periodically. Really, again, as an aid to the local government or Allied Control Commission. But this was always done, of course, in barracks, not in sight of the general German public. So it was a question, really, of the same old principles which had been carried out, I think, in India and Palestine before the World War II.
Now, the methods changed around about the 50s and 60s. What exactly were you doing at this stage? What were the methods employed at that stage in 1948?
Oh, very basic. I don't really think they changed very much. It was a question of having prepared banners which would go up instructing the public at large to disperse, and having a, if necessary, a little snatch team. But I am happy to say that, as far as we were concerned, never realised. We trained, practiced, rehearsed all this sort of thing in barracks, but we were never called upon to actually do anything like that.
Now, what about the officers' mess? We talked a bit about the officers' mess, but we didn't talk about guest nights. Was it a formal mess? Did they have guest nights, a sort of formal dinner?
Yes.
What were they like? Can you sort of give us a bit? Because they still happen today, obviously, but I mean, things probably haven't changed that much. But what was a formal guest dinner night like in 1948 when you were just a junior young officer?
Peacetime soldiering was rapidly being restored. The regiments in the British Army in Germany quickly settled down into their peacetime role and understandably wanted to get back to their own regimental and family traditions. At the time, we were in this, as I say, splendid German barracks in Wuppertal, entirely fitted out with barrack issue furniture and the rest of it, and no ordinary government issue cutlery and china, etc. So as quickly as possible, this was changed, and this applied not only to the Manchester Regiment but to all other regiments in Germany. And I was given the very interesting role of going to Hamburg with a 3-ton truck and a driver to meet a British ship in the docks there, and take control of the regimental silver and the regimental colours, which had been sent out from the depot in Altrincham, where it was at that time. So I was given the opportunity of doing a little bit of exploration of Germany on my own in this vastly uncomfortable vehicle, and this necessitated a very pleasant stay in one of the main hotels in Germany, overlooking the Alster Lake, and then making my way out to the docks, where I was able to take delivery of crates and crates of regimental silver and the colours, and then find my way back to Wuppertal. This then meant that both the officers' mess and the sergeant's mess had got a reasonable amount of silver to be able to be put on display in their respective messes and used to the best possible advantage. And this, of course, then meant that we could once again establish the routine of regimental dinner nights, etc., in the mess, which was a bachelor mess at the time. We young officers had to attend dinner every night from Monday to Friday. Saturday and Sundays were supper nights and fairly casual, but dinner nights during the week were as formal as they could possibly be, bearing in mind that a lot of the members of the mess had not really much experience in the formality of dinner nights, being either wartime soldiers or people like myself commissioned post-war. However, we had a good hardcore of senior officers from the commanding officer downwards who never forgot what they had done in their respective battalions prior to the war, and so the old traditions and activities were carried out very, very rapidly.
Now, what were they for the first night? I mean, what would a typical guest night, officer's guest night, or regimental dinner be like? How would the evening progress from start to finish?
Well, first of all, we were all now able to wear what was called number one dress, which was the new blues uniform. So this we changed into every evening for dinner, and we would assemble in the anteroom for a glass of sherry or G&T or whatever, and then the duty bugler would sound officers' mess call outside the mess, and when everything was ready, the mess sergeant would come in and announce that dinner was served, and then we would troop into the dining room led by the commanding officer and take our places in order, really, of seniority, to the best of my memory. And the dinner itself was a formal affair, and then the usual toasts to the Queen and to the
it'd be the King then, but that's a
moment. I beg your pardon, yes, to the King, yes, indeed, the King, and also to the Queen, who was then our newly appointed Colonel in Chief. After dinner,
would they have all the normal traditions of passing the port, that kind of?
Yes, the normal traditions of passing the port carried out, and perhaps on one or two nights a week, a section from the regimental band would play music during the meal, which of course was very nice, and this always finished up with their playing the regimental marches, and then we would retire to the anteroom, where normally there would be a little group, perhaps playing bridge or whist or whatever.
When you had a big guest night, would there be mess games, or was it not a mess games?
Well, when I say people retire to play bridge or a game of cards or something, that would be on a normal dinner night when it was just a purely family affair. When there was a guest night and we had visitors from other regiments, then there would be all manner of mess games, perhaps.
And what was popular in the Manchester? Well, people are fascinated by these games, they really are. it like? If you can remember them, it's a long time ago.
Well, they're very old favourite of "Are You There, Moriarty?" Was probably played most evenings.
How did that work? Well, different rules.
Well, basically, two people are blindfolded, or they lie down on the floor, extended in up with their heads together, and holding their inner arms, and then with their spare arm, they have a wad of newspaper rolled up as a truncheon. And in turn they say, "Are you there, Moriarty?" And the person they're speaking to says yes in some form of muffled way, moves his head as quickly as he can from where the voice was coming from, and the other person then tries to hit him on the head. And it can be very painful. Most of the time they're very amusing, as long as people know when to stop. Then other games, sort of rushing around the anteroom without touching the floor. Pretty barbaric. And then all sorts of simple but amusing games when you've had a few glasses of port, jumping, deep frogs and things like that. So all very good-natured.
Match rugby?
Not really, no. No, I don't remember anyone playing that.
High cockalorum?
High cockalorum is what I'm thinking of.
What was that?
High cockalorum is when you, it really emanates back to school days, when one person stands with his back to the wall and four or five others get in line, bend over with their legs, with their heads between the legs of the person in front of them, and then the remainder of the audience spring like little birds or heavy birds onto the backs of the people who are bent down, until eventually the sheer weight of numbers, the whole thing collapses and everybody gets up and starts all over again.
Now, was it I'm not suggesting it was, but was it a hard drinking mess or not so hard? I mean, different regiments, different battalions have different drinking cultures. What was the state of drinking in your officer's mess, would you say?
Without any doubt, we were a very normal, reasonable drinking. Nobody drank to excess. Because there were a lot of, Germany was in such a state of flux at the time, there were lots of people attached to the Control Commission who would come and stay with us for a night or two. And then pass on. And these were people who were involved in, let us say, supervising the works which were producing the jerry cans, the cans for carrying petrol, which we had, at the time, had come under British control. And again, the Control Commission doing other things. And there were one or two people who passed through whose war experiences used to catch up with them, and they would probably our first experience of seeing people with DTs, and that really was very frightening for those of us who had never experienced anything like this, with people watching, seeing imaginary birds and elephants floating in the sky. But those are few and far between, but it was an interesting, I suppose, from an educational point of view, just to see what did happen when drink got the worst of others.